everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. Welcome. I'm Dr. Terry, and thanks for listening. Today's program is all about relationships at work, a topic that we really don't talk enough about, particularly the relationship between boss, manager, and employee. Now, a recent Gallup poll found that more than two-thirds of American workers are not engaged in their jobs. And I think that is a lot of people who aren't interested, who aren't motivated, and who aren't doing their best work at their jobs. And we know that a boss's leadership skills can totally turn that around and affect employees' attitudes toward work, their motivation, and their engagement in what they're doing at their jobs. Now, my guest today is Vicki Oliver. She is a leading career development expert and the multi-best-selling author of 5 career books, including Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. Vicki is also a sought-after speaker and seminar presenter and a popular media source, having over 700 appearances in broadcast, print, and online outlets. Her website is VickiOliver.com, and that's Vicki with a Y, Oliver.com. So welcome to the program, Vicki. It's so nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And it's a great, great topic. But before we get to the topic, Vicki, tell us what a career development expert is and what inspired you to become one.
Okay. A career development expert, what I mean is that I sit down with people and I help them ratchet up their performance. In other words, help them do better on job interviews, you know, help people at the job who are having problems with their bosses and also their underlings. That's what a career expert does. In terms of my own career, I started as a receptionist, actually, in the advertising business, and I grew into, eventually, a creative director in the business. Here, I live in Manhattan. I live in and write and work in Manhattan, and I got a lot of practice while I was doing that with, you know, inter-office relations, like what could go wrong, and I decided to write about the experience, you know, and my first book was about job hunting. And then later I wrote a book called Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots. And I think that everybody probably has had one of those.
Absolutely. One of those, definitely. So you got a lot of experience at the business or at the workplace.
Yes.
Excellent. And you write about different kinds of relationships at the workplace then. So it would be employee, coworkers, as well as someone who's going on an interview and what they have to do at the interview.
Right. I mean, for example, you know, it's my theory that the grass is not greener. So if you are working at a company and you don't get along with either your boss or some colleagues over there, or maybe the person underneath you is driving you crazy, it is my contention that switching jobs does not solve the problem, because when you switch jobs, you're going to encounter the same types of people. Mm-hmm. And so if you can figure out the type of person that drives you crazy, you will do better, learn how to conquer that personality type, and your performance will improve.
I love it because, you know, I talk about that in terms of romantic relationships too, Vicki. I mean, just hopping from one romantic relationship to another does not help you. It does not benefit you. You want to figure out. Right, exactly. So that's so funny.
That,
you know,
that makes complete sense to me because, of course, one would be attracted to the same type of person over and over and over again. And then once you're in that relationship, if the person drives you crazy, it's not going to work. You have to learn how to deal with that type of person.
Exactly. And most of the time it's within you and figuring out what you need, what you want in a relationship. And I'm sure that's similar when we're talking about bosses and employees as well.
It's funny you say this. In my book, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots, I have one third of the book says the problem lies within. Like, is the problem within you?
Right.
And there's some self-diagnostic things there that readers can learn about to see if they are the problem. Because we always externalize. We say, it's my boss who's the problem. It's my colleagues who's the problem. A lot of times the problem lies within.
Right. And that's so true. In all of life, we tend to blame outside rather than look within and try to figure out how we can, you know, change a pattern, change a behavior, change an attitude. Now, I know you also write a lot about business etiquette. So what falls under business etiquette?
So in my book, 301 Smart Answers to Tough Business Etiquette Questions, that addresses all the little tiny things that one can do correctly at the office or incorrectly. For example, if you are, let's say you step into an elevator and your boss asks you, oh, how is that project coming along? You know, whether you should answer the question in the elevator. That's like a pillar of etiquette. Or should you wait and try to make an appointment with your boss later to talk about it? Who else is in the elevator? Who could be listening? Are you giving away company secrets by mistake? It's that type of thing. Mm. Etiquette is from actually the court of Louis the 14th. So it stretches back a long, long, long way.
That's a long way. Absolutely.
That's a long time ago. And his groundskeeper said to the king, all these people who live in your court are stepping on the grass and they are ruining the grass. And they put up these little signs back then that say, keep off the grass, right? Those little signs are called etiquettes.
Mm-hmm.
And just like
business.
Those little signs, there are hundreds and hundreds of rules, like don't step on the grass is one of the rules, right?
Right.
So in an office environment, there are also hundreds of little rules. And violating one or two or six, not a big deal. But if you keep violating these sort of unspoken rules of business etiquette, then people, they look at you and they say, you know what? She's not that professional.
Right.
We're not going to send her to see the client. And over time, it can erode your professionalism and your reputation.
So they're very important. Absolutely.
Right.
So
you're not going to, you know, memorize them, but the book gives you cues on how to sort of judge situations. Are you a considerate coworker, or are you always screaming
romances
over the cubicle wall?
How about office romances, Vicki? Is that business etiquette? Or
it's all in there. I have a chapter on office romances, actually.
Do. And what's your opinion?
Well, my opinion generally is don't do it. But if you're going to do it, you have to make sure that it's okay. Usually companies have handbooks, and they have certain laws in the handbook, you know. And if in your company handbook it says no, absolutely no office relationships, you know, you have to kind of figure out what to do. Maybe one of you will have to leave that organization, you know. If it's not spelled out in the handbook, I think there's a little more latitude with it. But you still have to be careful because the problem with it, I mean, there are many problems with it. Sometimes the problem is that other people will view the two of you as an alliance.
Right.
And that can kind of maybe mess up one of your careers at the company. Oh, these two people are allied. They always agree about everything, you know. And it can undercut you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's if it comes out. Sometimes it's a secret.
So it's part of my, I maintain that it probably will come out.
Right.
It's just the nature of the beast. Yes. You know, people talk, walls are thin, people hear. Yeah.
Yeah, I like to say that about affairs and infidelity and romantic relationships as well. You think that if you are having an affair, if I'm speaking to a client, that somehow your partner doesn't know or somehow it won't come out, but it always comes out.
Right.
And so similarly, you're saying that, you know, office romances, it comes out.
It comes out because inevitably what, you know, I used to work one of my very first jobs. You know, I began as a receptionist in advertising, and then I was promoted to secretary, right? And I was working for 5 account people, and that means for people not in that field, that means they are sort of the business end of advertising. And I was, you know, working for them. And 2 of them were having an affair. 2 of my 5 bosses, right, were having like a secret, you know, romantic affair. And, of course, I found out about it. I mean, in fact, they asked me to pass messages to each other, you know, through me or whatever. So, of course, I found out about it, you know. But the thing is, so did everybody else find out about it.
Right, right. Through those messages or other ways.
Yes, so everybody, you know, offices are small.
Yes.
Work is sometimes dull and people like to gossip, you know. Right. And the problem with it is maybe the 2 people think they're being very discreet, but then somebody from the office runs into the 2 of them on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And then they begin to ask themselves questions like, what are these 2 people doing together at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, you know?
Exactly. Or leaving together or coming
in. Leaving together or they're always taking vacation at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the other issue I think as well can be that sometimes people break up and then you're still working in that same job environment.
Right.
Where
then the 2 people who seem to always have the alliance, now they tend to be hostile towards each other, right? It's not good for just teamwork in general. I'm sure there are, you know, millions of exceptions to every rule, but as a rule, I would say if a relationship is happening and it really begins to get serious, it's usually a good idea for one person to leave the company.
Okay, so today, though, we're going to be talking about bosses and managers. I had to ask you about office romances because
absolutely.
I'm always curious.
Thank you.
And in your book, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots, it's all about how managers or bosses can provide inspiration and motivate their employees. So before we get to the strategies of how to do that, how to lead well, why do you think that particular relationship is so important in the workplace?
I feel like one spends more time at the workplace usually than one spends with their spouse. So if you have a terrible relationship with an underling, let's say you're a boss, and you're not providing like that person a feeling of fulfillment working for you, you know, it becomes very toxic, and then you're spending like so much time trying to solve that problem. And I think that's it. I mean, we work very hard, and it's important to get along with the people that you work with.
Right. And the outcome of getting along with the people you work with is that you do work harder, you're more reliable, you're focused, right? Wouldn't you say that those are also the outcomes?
Yes. I mean, it's also people really like to feel a sense of purpose when they go to the office. You know, it almost doesn't matter how much you get paid or what you're paying people. It's like people beyond that, they need to feel needed and like they are providing value to the company.
And that's true.
Again,
of all relationships,
brings that out in people, and a terrible boss squashes it in people.
Right. And I agree with you because that's in all relationships, again, Vicki. And I'm, you know, fascinated or struck by what you're saying is important within a work relationship is also important in a romantic relationship. We need to feel needed, special, noticed. And so we need our boss to notice us and to feel like we are needed and important.
Right. It's funny that you say this because I've often compared job interviewing to going on a first date.
I have too. I have too, Vicki, totally. And it is so similar, right?
It is similar.
First impression, what you do, how you sit, how you stand, shake hands, all of that. The questions you ask, how you answer, they're all important on a job interview and they're all important on a first date.
Absolutely.
So now, what are some strategies for how bosses or managers can be good leaders and inspire their workers?
So, I mean, again, as in my book, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots, it all depends on, you know, who the team is, who you have working for you, and what their personality types happen to be. But as a general rule, I would say to beware of micromanaging your employees because it makes people feel hemmed in to be watched, to be micromanaged at every point. And at a certain point, you just have to give them enough rope and just make sure that they don't hang themselves with it, you know. But you have to just be able to sort of stand back and trust that the people who work for you are going to work hard. They're going to work long. You don't have to watch over them. You don't have to look at what's on their computers. I would say don't micromanage your employees.
So you have to believe in them. You have to believe in them. You have to let all of the control go. And I know that's hard for me as a boss because, you know, I'm a control freak, as many women are, right? So I like deadlines. I like to make sure things are getting done. But you're saying that I need to let go of all control.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, what I would suggest is set your expectations. These are my expectations for this assignment. And see if people, you know, adhere, if they like that or if they balk. But set your expectations. You know, I think it's fair to make your expectations very high. And then if you want, I mean, if the person's a new employee, maybe you want to set up some general benchmarks for their progress. And some general timeline of what you expect, what, you know, let's say it's papers, when they're going to turn in their papers, when they're going to turn in their research, you know, whatever it is, like there be a deadline and working backwards from the ultimate deadline, set up, you know, a timeline. But beyond that, you have to let them figure it out and work and, you know, feel like they are productive and they don't have to be like watched. Like you're not a parent, you know, you're not their parent. And I think that sometimes in office situations, like people feel like their boss is their dad or their mother, you know?
And we don't like having someone over us. We don't like someone watching us every minute. We don't want them to get involved so much in our personal lives, right? So I think that's a really good strategy. Back off from micromanaging and set your expectations. Be clear about them. And that's hard for many managers too, right? Because you don't know your expectations all the time. So that's important.
Especially when you're in a situation where you're in the middle. It's very hard for somebody in the middle. Now, today, a lot of layers at companies have been cut, you know, and so there are fewer people actually in the middle of a company. But if you are in the middle, sometimes the problem is that the expectations keep changing because, you know, you have a boss. So you're trying to set expectations for the people under you, but you also have a boss, and maybe that person has a boss, and, like, the expectations can change. You know, that's where trying to communicate and being open about it helps. Oh, you know, we have a new directive, or we all have a new boss, you know, and the new boss expects this, and therefore the timeline has to be shorter, or whatever the problem is.
Absolutely.
You know, tell people what's going on.
Okay, so give us another strategy. I like that. Don't micromanage, set your expectations. What's another strategy? How can I motivate the people who work for me?
I would say, like, a big thing is to share your ultimate vision with the people who work for you. And remember that most people working for you don't want a job. They are looking for growth, fulfillment, and to feel like they are adding value to the company. Mm-hmm. So tell them what it is that you're looking for. Sometimes, you know, make them feel important also, I think, is really a critical skill. Mm-hmm. I think a great way to, if an employee feels like he or she is an ambassador for the company, that
they
really
represent,
gives them something to step up to. Mm-hmm. You're not an employee, you're an ambassador for our company.
And do I do that face-to-face, Vicki? Would I sit down with my employees and share my vision, share the mission of the organization or the company face-to-face?
I think it actually begins when, if you're interviewing the person, that's when you begin. Oh, this is our company mission. Right? And then you look at the person and you listen to their talents and you interview the person, feeling, does this person fit? Can this person help the company fulfill the company vision?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say you hire that person because they seem to fit within the organization. In the beginning of your relationship with that person, once they're on staff, that's the beginning of the time when you can impart the vision to that person through one-on-one. I would do it one-on-one. But also, company meetings are a great place to reinforce what it is that you are all striving toward.
Right, you know? And especially if you have a small company or a small group of people who work for you. Like, I have a research team, and we meet every week. And so we sit around a big table, and I continually start with, here's our mission, here are our goals,
right,
and you all are important to achieving those goals. Okay,
right.
We have to move forward because we only have a few more minutes, but give us a few more tips for the bosses and managers out there. How can I inspire the people who work for me?
So, I mean, this is one that I really like a lot. It's like the thought is to give the people who work for you the freedom to fail.
Mm.
I think so often, because we are all very success-driven, we want everybody to succeed. But people can't really take risks if they feel that they will be penalized. You know, if they fail once, you want people to stretch. You want them to stretch. You don't want them to just say, okay, you know, what do I have to do? I'm here from 9 to 5. Give me a list, right? You
right.
want them to stretch.
So give
and
me a
sometimes
quick example.
In the stretch, they won't make it. They will not be able to fulfill what they set out to do. And I think it's important to say, you know what? You tried.
And so give me an example, a quick example, Vicki, of how it's okay for them to fail.
Let's say you are trying to pitch new business, right? So what mm-hmm. happens? A lot of times, you know, especially in the smaller company, we'll sit down and the workers will write lists, wish lists of companies that they would like to bring into the fold. And maybe somebody has, like, a bigger company that they want to bring in. You know, somebody that it's difficult to reel that client in. And then you say, you know what? Okay. And then maybe they have, you know, a brother-in-law who knows somebody at the company. And so you say, okay, try. Go for it. And then they do go for it, and it fails, mm-hmm. you know? And the big company says, no, we're already being serviced. Thanks, you know? And it's sort of a colossal flop. I think it's important to say, you know what? You tried. And it was
right.
good that you expanded your vision and you tried. Now, what can we learn from that to go rope in some smaller clients and bring those in?
I love it. Very good. Great example too, Vicki. Thank you so much. We are all out of time, believe it or not, but I want to recap at least the three strategies that you said, which is don't micromanage, set your expectations, be sure you share your vision as a leader, as a manager or boss, and then give your employees the freedom to fail. So thank you so much for joining us, Vicki. I love talking to you. And
it was so much fun. Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm, as I said, impressed and fascinated that many of the things that you're talking about also are important in romantic relationships, sometimes in parent-child relationships, sometimes in friendships as well. So thank you so much. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Vicki Oliver and her book, Bad Bosses, Crazy Coworkers, and Other Office Idiots, you can visit her website at VickiOliver.com. You can also follow her on Facebook and Twitter at Vicki Oliver. So as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's simple and easy to understand. So until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.